second episode for Twin Cities SHRM podcast. Thanks for joining us today. I am Jessie Novi, an HR business partner with CH Robinson and a board member with Twin Cities SHRM. I live in Minneapolis with my daughter and husband, and I am incredibly passionate about all things HR. But I find myself the most energized when I am able to roll up my sleeves and dive into projects that are focused on learning and development, leadership development, and organizational effectiveness. I'm excited, as always, to be joined with my co-host, Mike. Mike, you want to introduce yourself?
Yeah, hey guys, I'm Mike Toole. I'm a Twin Cities SHRM board member and an HR technology consultant for SAP SuccessFactors, father of three, and I live in Lakeville, Minnesota with my wife.
Awesome. So we have several exciting events that are coming up with Twin Cities SHRM during the month of October. First, I want to highlight our October 10th event. We're holding our October 9 Networking Mistakes and How to Avoid Them. The program is based on an award-winning book called The 20-Minute Networking Meeting, and the presenter is Marcia Ballinger, who is a longtime Twin Cities executive search leader.
And on October 16th, we have our monthly webinar. That month, we'll cover key updates from the past year in employment law that will impact your business heading into 2020. Jessica Bradley and Emily McNee from Littler Mendelson will be presenting.
And then finally, on October 28th, we're holding our fall student event. This is an opportunity for HR students to gain valuable knowledge, enhance their professional reputation, and network with local HR professionals and students. Our keynote speaker is Heidi Height, talent brand leader at Polaris. She will be speaking about branding yourself before, during, and after an interview. All right, Mike and I are super excited to be joined by Megan Chung, Vice President of People at Drip, as well as John Tedesco, CEO at Drip, to introduce our two podcast interviewees today. Megan is currently the VP of People at Drip. Drip is the world's first e-commerce CRM. Drip is the first platform focused on helping online brands build better experiences for their customers at scale. They're putting resources historically reserved for the biggest enterprises smack dab in the hands of smaller teams with big dreams. This gives specialty brands an opportunity to thrive instead of getting swallowed up and spit out by e-commerce giants. I love this, Megan. This is the best bio. Drip is well-funded, growing fast, and building a better product with every new day, and has offices in both Minneapolis, Minnesota, as well as Salt Lake City, Utah. Megan graduated from the University of Minnesota Carlson School of Management with her degree in HR management. She has over 17 years of HR experience, beginning at Navarre Corporation, where she was from 2002 until 2012. As a lifelong learner, she went back to school during her tenure with Navarre and got an MBA at the University of St. Thomas. Before starting at Drip, she worked at Angie's Boom Chicka Pop as the VP of HR. As a private equity-backed business, Megan's main focus at Angie's was building organizational capabilities as the company scaled for growth as an eventual sale at Conagra Brands in 2017. Before Angie's, she was the director of HR Small Business Services at Deluxe Corporation from 2012 until 2016. While there, she led the development and execution of HR plans, heavily focused on growth through acquisitions within the Small Business Services division. Megan thrives in hyper-growth small to mid-sized companies where she can wear many hats and make a direct impact on the success of the business through its people. Megan and her husband, Vin, and kids, Addison and Gavin, live in Maple Grove. And in her personal time, she loves cheering on her kids' activities and spending time with family and friends. All right, for John today, we're going to be referring to John as JT, but for the purposes of being a little bit more formal during John's bio today, we'll refer to him as his formal name, John Tedesco. So for the past two decades, John Tedesco has immersed himself in all things early stage tech. During the first half of his career, John founded and led three venture-backed software companies as CEO. Since then, he has served as a C-level executive, board member, investor, and advisor for over a dozen other technology companies across U.S. and Canada. John currently serves as the CEO of Drip, a first-of-its-kind e-commerce CRM that helps online brands grow their loyal customer base. DRIP has over 100 employees and 7,000 customers across the globe. DRIP's distribution of the marketing technology sector isn't going unnoticed, having recently been awarded spots in the top 50 fastest growing products and top 50 best products for marketers of 2019 by G2 Crowd. John also sits on the board of directors for Minneapolis-based When I Work, the market-leading SaaS platform for hourly workforce scheduling and time tracking. He is a pro bono mentor for MESA, which is the Minnesota's emerging software advisory group, and is a mentor to students enrolled in entrepreneurial studies at the University of Minnesota's Carlson School of Business. John lives in Edina with his wife and two elementary school-aged daughters. Super excited to have you guys here today. Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Yes, we're excited.
Okay. Well, first of all, guys, I'm excited to have this interview. Very impressive bios. Love to hear more about DRIP. Love to hear more about HR. And it's a pleasure to have JT here to talk about how the CEO views the HR suite and how that factors into the overall strategy of the business. Easy way to get started. Tell the listeners a little bit about your daily habits, whether it's daily, weekly, you know. Tell us what makes you guys tick and how you guys start off your days.
Yeah. For me, for daily habits, it's all about spending time with myself. And so for me, when I wake up early in the morning so that I can get me time. I've got a 10 and an 8-year-old. And so I don't get a lot of that very often. And so I get up and I usually read. And then I am a huge coffee lover, and so I do that. And then it's get ready. So for me, recently I started meditating, actually. And so I use an app called Headspace, and I normally do that on a at least regular basis, so daily, if not more, for me.
Great. That's the second person, actually, in two episodes that mentioned meditation with Headspace, so... we should charge them for the advertising.
Yes.
JT, how about you?
Yeah, I think, you know, also the father of two, a 10-year-old and an 8-year-old. You know, I'd like to pretend that I meditate. And if I do it, I do it more so at night, which leads directly to sleep. But I think for me, you know, starting up early, definitely early morning rise. And I think the key thing for me is physical activity, so getting the exercise. So whether it's before work and or during work, I think one of the habits that Megan and I participate that we're fortunate to have is that we have a gym in our building, and so there's a crew of us that go down every day right before lunch, and we do a kettlebell or CrossFit workout, and that's good team bonding, but it also obviously clears the head. So physical exercise, I think, at the end of the day is the most important thing for my state of mind, quite frankly.
Absolutely. So I want to get into DRIP, and you know, before we do, can you give us an overview of DRIP, the history, how it came to be?
So I think you did a good job covering DRIP in the bio up front, but just to summarize, so DRIP helps e-commerce brands build their loyal customer base. There's a proliferation of direct-to-consumer brands that's being made possible, so pretty much any good or product is available online today. And what we do is we help those brands really market themselves to their audiences and build that loyalty over time. And we do that with a cloud-based software platform, which we call an e-commerce CRM. And what that does is that brings a single view of all the customer data, and then it informs the merchant and the retailer on how to use that data to communicate with their customers based on where they are in that customer journey between the, you know, the customer and the brand themselves. It was founded, DRIP was, in 2013. It moved to Minneapolis in 2016, and really since that move has had pretty explosive growth. We have over 7,000 customers around the globe, and we're generating hundreds of millions of dollars in revenue for those merchants. So we're really excited. It's really what we call the top of the first inning in terms of the market and the business, mm-hmm. but super excited about where we are in this overall market opportunity.
Right. So, I mean, this is an HR podcast. So, you know, obviously our listeners want to understand from a CEO's perspective how HR plays into the strategy and vision of the company. Startups have kind of been known for having unique cultures, and that's so important. But I think as we talked to Angie last episode, it's not just startups that care about their culture. It's everybody, and companies are starting to identify that this is a huge competitive differentiator. Talk to us a little bit, JT, about how HR and Megan, how they tie into the overall strategy of the business, and how important it is for them to execute on that.
Yeah, so I think it's hard not to, at a startup, think about people at the end of the day. So let's move it away from HR, which is kind of like this bureaucratic functional term, and more like people. And people are what startups, you know, are all about, really, at the earliest stages. And of course, people is important through every stage of a business life cycle. But the importance around the people you get onto, our metaphor is a crew boat, but the people onto the team early on are critical to its success. And so we think about the business, this concept of machines. There's four machines in our business: product machine, customer machine, company machine, and the people machine. And really, people is equal to all of those other parts of the business conceptually. And I think the best startups in my career, you know, which has gone for a couple of decades now, how early they brought in a senior people person has really set the course in terms of a trajectory for those businesses. I find it just ultimately interwoven to the success of the business at such an early stage.
How big was Drip when you came on board?
Yeah, I think when I started, we had 80 employees, I want to say. Yeah, it was about 80, under 100.
Because that was really interesting what you said about how important it is to bring a people person on early. Is there a certain point within, is it employee count? Is it customer count? Like, when would somebody want to make sure they brought in somebody of a high level into that role?
Yeah, that's a great question. Usually it's, you know, it starts with the economics. When can you afford someone of the right level and the right skills? But I'd say the best companies are adding a senior leader of people starting from the 20-plus range. And they're wearing, obviously, many hats at that time. They're doing a lot of recruiting. They're also doing all of the core, you know, kind of traditional HR benefits side of the house there. But from 20 to 30 on, that's when the culture is really being formed. And it is, I don't think that's too early in terms of like an economic investment. Again, all down to the right person for sure.
And you have a history, JT, of being with startups. Something specific to startups that you're drawn to?
Yeah, I mean, so yeah, personally, I love the disruption that, at least early stage technology startups bring to markets. They take these staid industries, generally speaking, and look at them from a different angle using technology, and most times helping the customer experience be better. And so those things just naturally gravitate, that disruption. I just love that disruption. Mm-hmm. And then I love the concept of, you know, your effort is demonstrated in the results of a business. So, what you do is showing up every day versus being in a larger company where you're kind of buried sometimes in the organizational structure due to size, the normal kind of the reasons there. So I just love kind of living on that efficient frontier curve between effort and results.
Is that similar for you, Megan? You came from Angie's, which I think a lot of people in the state, know that company pretty well. Talk a little bit about the transition from a larger company into a startup. Have you been in startups before?
So this is my first tech startup, and I would say that the difference in Angie's, my experience at Angie's is we were a founder-based organization, but we were private equity backed, and so a little bit different model and timeline, if you will, but still had the spirit of our founders, Dan and Angie Bastian, like through and through, which was an important hallmark, I think, that I continued to kind of carry when I joined the organization, when I did, which was a great honor and just an amazing experience for me career-wise. But I think for me personally, why smaller? So, startup or not startup, smaller organizations resonate is I've done the big I've done the mid-size, and I think what it comes down to is in a smaller organization, you just connect more. You know, we talk about at Drip, we talk about bringing your whole self. You know, in a smaller organization, you can connect more and I think deeper at a deeper level than, you know, living in a matrix organization where, you know, you've got multi hats, multi bosses, and it's harder to navigate in those size organizations. And I just found that I naturally gravitated, towards smaller organizations, and that just gave me more energy and fit. Was a better fit for me for my skill set too.
Was there an adjustment period that you had to go through?
Yeah, so great question. I think that, you know, the truth of the matter is in much larger organizations, you have more resources, period, right? You have more people, you sometimes have more technology, the enablement of the work that you do every day is different. But what I think I love most is coming in, and especially at Drip, is like we're building something. And when JT talked about earlier about making an impact, and like that is every single individual, as we talk about in the boat, everybody makes an impact every day. And so for me, coming into an organization this size, just the opportunity to build and bring in the experiences, previous experiences, but even more so, you know, it's a different team. And so it's not about, you know, redoing what you've done before. It's about considering the team members that are apart and what are we going to do that's different. So I love small companies and building.
Yeah. JT, you mentioned earlier that, you know, your business is the people that are in it, especially within a startup. So, talking about the culture and either of you can take this one, mm-hmm. but a culture fit's really important, especially in, you know, you mentioned resources mm-hmm. as many as a large company. It's not necessarily a plug and play model when you're at that size. Mm-hmm. What's a culture fit for you guys? How do you find it?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think for me, first and foremost, to answer that question, you got to define what culture is. And I think you can open any textbook and there are like many definitions of culture. But for me, I like to keep it simple. It's a way of life. And so when I think about the way of life in any organization, it's from when you walk into the building to when you leave at night. And quite frankly, you continue because now we're connected 24/7, right? Mm-hmm. Through technology, you continue. And so it actions and interactions with people, decisions, leadership, how leadership models behaviors, how we make decisions as an organization, how we celebrate the wins, like all of that feeds into the culture that we're building. And I think one of the things that I think is unique at a startup is that it's so raw from the standpoint of we talk about you can't hide as an organization. Every individual in the boat, as we say, is you know, expected to show up. And so when we talk about what's that cultural fit for us, we operate in and have kind of what we call our three guiding principles. And those guiding principles are all around, you know, what we view as important, how we view our team to show up, quite frankly, how we make decisions. And so what those guiding principles are today are growth is our number one guiding. Well, not number one, but, you know.
Yeah, first and foremost.
Yeah. So growth from that standpoint is all about not only growth of the organization, but growth as individuals and people who are a part of our experience and part of Drip. We absolutely expect that people are growing in the role. They're getting exposure to things that they wouldn't in larger organizations. And so hence, they're going to grow. The second kind of guiding principle that we talk a lot about is impact. And that is, you know, so people who come into our organization that aren't used to the fact that you can't hide, that becomes pretty known fairly quickly. And so, you know, we talk a lot about there are problems that we're solving every single day and every voice matters and every idea counts. And so every individual, no matter what your level or title is in the organization, is making an impact. And that's a key critical piece. And then the last guiding principle is really around fun. And we call it fun. And I think for us, it's not about ping pong and beer, as a lot of startups are known for. It's about winning. We talk a lot about celebrating the wins. And I think winning is about the individuals that you're winning with. And so it has more to do with the team and the humans that you get to interact with every day. And, you know, we talk about climbing the mountain and really wanting to enjoy those individuals that you're working with and that we're solving really hard problems with. And that's fun to us. So I think from a culture standpoint, those guiding principles are what we talk about from a fit standpoint. You know, can you grow? Can you make an impact? And are we going to enjoy working with you, quite frankly, as a part of the team? Because every hire in a small startup in an organization our size is such an incremental add to what we're building. And so it's even more important in our size.
Absolutely. And you mentioned growth being kind of a key pillar. Sometimes at startups or smaller companies, that growth track doesn't look the same as it would at, you know, a Fortune 100 company. Mm-hmm. So is there anything that you guys are doing from a career path perspective that gives people, you know, kind of something to aim for beyond what they're doing today?
Yeah, so that's a great question. And it's a challenge for us in any small organization, because for us, what I always talk about is it's not necessarily if you're looking for a company to grow in title, you know, with multi-levels and you know, layered opportunities. And I think about organizations that, you know, you're on a track for a promotion like every 18 months or right. You're looking for that next. That's not us. We're a fairly flat organization, and that's intentional. And so what I will say, though, from a career development standpoint is it's all about the experiences and exposures to whether it's challenging problems that you're getting to solve and you're getting to be a part of that at no matter what your level is, or whether it's leaders and being in meetings with senior leaders of the organization and expecting to speak up and to participate because your voice matters. It really matters. Or whether it's just getting exposure to, you know, customer problems, quite frankly, that you might not get in a much larger organization because you're focused on whatever your little piece of the pie is, right. Not necessarily the overarching customer experience. And so do we have traditional, you know, career path tracks? No. Do I think we have an opportunity to bring some of that, like I say, light? Yeah, probably we do. But at the end of the day, what differentiates, I think, the individuals in a startup from a much larger organization is we expect people to come with, you know, their own energy around career development, and we will enable the heck out of it. Mm-hmm. but we do not spoon feed the development programs, if you will, that much larger organizations like just have a plethora of resources for.
So you give them the ability to build their own path, essentially.
Yes.
You know, there's going to be roles that they may be interested in that don't exist today.
Yes.
That's right. Thank you. JT, you want to add to that?
Yeah, so there's a couple of things. I think there's a term that they say if you're coming to a startup for kind of career planning or career development, you're coming to the wrong place. And I think what they mean by that is you're in an environment where the growth opportunities by default exist because the company is, you know, changing every day. There are, you know, generally new, you know, no formal policies, procedures, or ways of doing things. And because you are generally, if you're growing fast, the things that you did rely on constantly change. So by default, there's that growth piece. So while there's not formal career progression, the ability to continue to take on more responsibility and learn are generally endless. And so our best performers are people who are always asking for more, searching for more, and are proactive in doing that. Mm-hmm. Now, it reminds me, I started my career in large corporate America, starting at GE in their management training program. And back when GE was a decent company, it's changed a lot since then. But but I always, there was this one in particularly sarcastic leader, but he sat down this kind of the new crop of people. And he gave us some career advice that has stayed with me since. And it's, I think, particularly apropos for early stage startups. But he said, do not wait for the clouds to part in the sky and this plunger to come down on your forehead and pull you through your career development. you know, you have to make your own career development. Mm-hmm. And that is for sure the case in a startup. You know, there is no formal program. And if we actually have one, that's probably not a good thing, quite frankly, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. So, however, if you want to learn, you have that growth DNA, that DNA of learning. You're not afraid to take on more. You're going to stretch yourself. You're going to work harder. It's pretty limitless in terms mm-hmm. of where you can go. And we are seeing and doing, we're at a stage now with over 100 employees and being around for a number of years. Some of our best people are swapping functional areas and they're moving from one function to another just to get greater exposure. And that is an amazing thing to have that ability to do that in an environment where it's okay. And if you actually don't succeed there, it's not going to be catastrophic. So we're allowing you to take that chance in return for the belief that we know that you're going to really put it all in there to succeed. And that's just a great, like that's, you couldn't ask for a better sandbox in which to do right. that. And that's what I think is so amazing about startups. But again, if you're looking for formal programming and this is 18 months, et cetera, and you care about titles, generally, I'd say startups are not the right place. And, right. This, and again, we're talking not just about Drip. We're talking about the world of startups. You're in it for the wrong. You're looking for the wrong things right. if you're going to the startup for just title progression and putting a senior in front of your title and being excited versus actually, what am I learning? How am I better off? You know, what's truly resumeable at the end of the day?
Absolutely. Yeah. So you've had a long track record of success leading these startups and being a leader in other businesses. Was there a point in your career when you elevated HR kind of in your own mind, and it could have always been that way. But I think HR is evolving into much more of a strategic role within a business. I think CEOs, boards are looking at them more and saying, hey, you guys are a huge pillar to the company. Did that change with you over the years, or have you always thought?
Yeah, that's a great question. Yeah, no, that's a great question. I feel like it's always been there. And it was like the natural, it seemed logical. Like you don't overthink it like, oh boy, I read some HBR article. Let me make people important. It just seemed like the intuitive right thing to do. And I'd suggest that other startup leaders, you know, we were talking earlier around Sports Engine, another local startup that got acquired by NBC a few years ago and is doing phenomenally with over 500 employees. But Justin Coffenberg, the founder, one of the founders and CEO of that company where I did work for a few years, he early on brought on Anna Klombies as VP of HR. And Anna had tremendous success at Big Charts before that, which was another startup that got acquired. And he just, you know, same kind of concept. I don't think he thought, like, I need to get somebody. He just needed a senior people person very right. early. And I think he brought on Anna very, very early in that process, back to that 20 or 30 people. So I think people just, I think good leaders just intuitively get it because it's, you know, it's not because it's some academic article that makes sense or it's trendy in some sort of, it's just the right thing to do because you're in the trenches and you know I need somebody there as this partner to help with all of that, which is necessary to, mm-hmm. when you get to 20 plus people and 30 plus people.
Yeah, if I could double click on that, I think the other thing is that so the reason for me and I think HR in general and people leaders, the reason that I joined Drip actually was because of JT, because I think that the difference in leadership and especially in that CEO role and how important and critical it is for the people leader and the CEO to be really connected. Is the difference is EQ, and we talk a lot about this. And so what I will say, because JT won't say it himself, but he's high IQ, like wicked smart, wicked smart.
I'm blushing. I'm blushing. You can't see this. This is radio only, right?
Yeah, right.
Okay.
And he understands from the EQ side of the world just how important, no matter what our technology platform is, it's only as powerful as the people that, you know, partner with our customers, solve the problems. It is about the people fundamentally that differentiates Drip from anybody else in the marketplace. And so so I think that that is an important differentiator in a CEO to really understand the true value. It is not transactional, old school HR. It is strategic partnership in a lot of ways.
Oh, And to piggyback off the IQ, EQ, I mean, we're seeing a lot of articles written about it, how important EQ is, almost more so than IQ in some situations. Are you guys doing anything from a recruitment standpoint to identify both sides of that? And what do you put more weight on? Is it specific to different roles, or what's more important to you guys in a person that comes to Drip?
Yes. So I think yes and yes. what I would say is what's really important for us is obviously we screen for and we recruit and interview for technical skills, right? We don't have the luxury of having just fat as an organization, right? We need people who can do. And so that's important. But I think the differentiator for us is we spend a ton of time talking about from a cultural fit standpoint. And that is really where the EQ side of the world kind of lives is, you know, how, you know, specifically people leaders, like how do you motivate and ensure that you're getting the right talent onto your team? That's not an HR thing. That's a people leader thing. And so if we're hiring a people leader, like they better sure as heck know how to do that and, right. and show us how, you know, talk to us about how they can do that. So I think, you know, hiring and interviewing for the EQ side is just, it's also has to do with like fundamentally, like I joke, like, what do you like to do for fun? Because guess what? At the end of the day, work is work, but, you know, we don't show up just to do the work, right? Like, who are you as a human and how can we make sure that we're connecting with that in totality? Because we expect all of our employees to bring their whole self, as I said earlier. And so that makes us richer and makes us better as an organization. That, I think, is just as important on the EQ side.
Yeah, you know, just piggyback off that. I mean, I think it's an and I don't think we have to have like an or in the IQ versus EQ kind of piece. We, on the IQ, like we need people who are, you know, we call it intellectually curious or intellectually agile. You just need to because you're consuming a lot of information rapidly. And so how do you evolve and incorporate that in every function? So, you know, there was a football coach when they were talking about doing the NFL draft and, you know, they said you can't teach speed, mm-hmm. you know, so you need to have some intellectual horsepower at the end of the day, I think, to be successful in a startup. But to Megan's point, if again, you know, we'll touch on this a little bit, this concept of a crew boat. Everyone likes to talk about startups as a rocket ship. And, you know, I've written about this a little bit on LinkedIn. The rocket ship metaphor is wickedly flawed. It's this concept of something that's self-propelled, that you sit in, get strapped in, and it, you know, and it gets transported. And that's not what a startup is. A startup, the better metaphor we believe, is a crew boat. You got to get your ass in a tiny little seat, and you're gonna row, you know, from head to toe. Every muscle in your body is gonna be exhausted, and you have to do that in alignment with all the people in front and in back of you. And to do that, you've really got to enjoy the people around you. And so you can't, that's where EQ comes in. And again, I think the best companies are those that are customer centric, for lack of a better term, put customers first. And if you don't have empathy for the customer problems, you're not going to build a great product and a great company. So you need empathy to be, to survive, I think, as a startup. And so that empathy is not just socially enjoying somebody on this small crew boat, but just really being able to build a company that is there to solve customer problems ultimately.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Back in August, talking about the customer experience, but also the employee experience. Back in August, they had, I think there was 200 CEOs signed a letter stating that shareholders are no longer the only thing that we need to care about. Employees and customers should actually come first. I think that is relevant in the enterprise space and is relevant in the startup space. So talking about customer and employee talent experience, I mean, you guys are, things are changing all the time. Can you talk to us a little bit about what you're working on from a customer experience side, as well as talent?
Yeah, I think just to kick that off too, I think what's important to understand is kind of where we're at from an evolution of a business standpoint and what I talk about as far as the why we're doing what we're doing, but also our greater why quest. Sometimes we talk about it as a quest, as an organization. And the reason why I think we're at kind of this transition point and evolution point as a business is because in 2018, we rolled out our new brand for Drip. It really was focused on building this category, this ECRM category, and we've had huge success from then. In that success, we've built out a team, a much larger organization. And so at the beginning of 2018, you know, we were half the size we are today. We were all located in Minneapolis. So we have since expanded and grown double in size. We have two locations now, one in Minneapolis and one in Salt Lake City. And so it's more important, if not more critical now than ever, that we get really crystal clear around articulating why Drip. And that starts with the customer, which JT can talk about, but it feeds in, you know, fast follows to the employees and the employee experience in total.
Yeah, so I think, you know, on that concept, so what's not changing as we think about this evolution of how we work at the company, what's not changing is why we exist. This concept of we're here to help these e-commerce brands compete in an Amazon-dominated world. And that why is super critical. You know, it was Adam Grant, the Wharton professor, organizational behavior professor, was interviewing Malcolm Gladwell a while back around Malcolm Gladwell's experience at the Washington Post and what it meant for organizations in general. And he had this, Malcolm Gladwell did, a super insightful comment. And he was just talking about how an editor at the newspaper got tired of working with the reporter who was great at his craft, but couldn't deal with like that personality. And Malcolm Gladwell made a comment that it's so interesting how organizations forget about why they exist and who they serve. And there is this concept as you get, when you're small, and there's like eight people sitting around like a table, you're side by side, and this, and you hear the, you know, CEO, who's usually the salesperson and potentially the coder, also talking to customer prospects on a phone or hearing of a support ticket. You know, everyone understands why you exist because that customer is your survival. And then as you get bigger, you know, that nexus to the customer gets further and further away. The only people who actually talk to the customers become customer support personnel or salespeople. And then, you know, the law of large, you know, meetings take over and all the rest. And so I think remembering why you exist, and it's usually not because of what's inside the building, it's what's going on outside the building. And so for us, this concept of helping these e-commerce brands and what we think is going to become a, like the retail landscape is going through this brands versus barcode battle, whereby if brands don't articulate why they exist and build relationships with their customers, their products are going to be commoditized and available on Amazon. That's a pretty stark world. And for us, helping these brands exist is why we exist. And then that cascades down from there. So first and foremost, if you're not excited about that mission and that purpose as a company, then we are totally not the right place, because that's why we exist. And if we're not successful in that mission and that doesn't get you up every day and thinking about those brands and the revenue they're generating and the customers they're making happy and the employees that are now being or working at these companies, then this is totally the wrong place to be. Mm-hmm.
So Megan, I want to spend just a little bit of time talking about kind of your world and being in HR, talking about that. We talked a lot about the culture. Who owns culture within a startup or really any company?
Yeah.
Is it HR? Is it everybody? Can you shed some light on your thoughts?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think ultimately it's everyone. Everyone impacts culture. And so it doesn't matter what your level or title or responsibilities, roles, responsibilities. Everybody impacts it. But I think, you know, it starts at the CEO level to kind of set that vision and set the tone, what I like to call the tone. But then from an HR partnership standpoint and people standpoint, we are the champions. So we are the ones that make sure that, you know, JT and I spend a lot of time talking about communication. Like, how do we make sure that we're messaging what we want to message through the channels to meet our employees where they need to be met, right? That isn't just a small feat, especially in our size organization that has two locations, right? So we have to get scrappy and get creative with that. So it's about communication. It's about thinking about, going back to this whole concept of you can't hide in a startup, how we onboard employees, how we treat employees through their time with us, and how we offboard and exit employees matters. So I think, culture and how we show up and how people feel through their experience with Drip, every stage of that matters and impacts our culture. So again, going back to, I just view the people team in that I get to lead as champions for that mm-hmm. in partnership with obviously JT setting the tone.
Yeah, I mean, I want to add, I think it's unfair to put culture on the shoulders of a functional area, particularly HR and or an HR leader. I think that concept is just, just not realistic because of, how I show up as a leader, how our leadership team shows up, and then how every individual shows up is what makes the culture there. And so, they might be the champion, the people function. They may be the ombudsman to ensure that, we walk the talk. But in reality, you got to think that the culture is like a garden and you're feeding it and then you're also weeding it as well. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, if you're authentically not executing on the day to day, it's not the fault of the people team. It's the fault of me. It's the fault of the leaders. And then it's the fault of every individual. Because I think whenever just organizationally, when you centralize something, we see this in other functional areas, for example, like in our engineering team, we don't have a centralized quality assurance focus. Like our engineers are responsible for the quality of their code. When you put something into a separate bucket that it becomes somebody else's responsibility, then you just create organizational crutches.
Right.
So if you say, oh, culture is a responsibility of, the people team or whatever, but I'm going to act like a jerk over here, that's wrong. So I think champion, a megaphone, an amplifier, obviously the training pieces, and obviously an ombudsman to call out our own, when our behaviors don't actually walk the talk, calling us out on that. I think those are all the critical roles of a people leader and or a people function in general.
How do you measure it? Is it I walk in the office and I feel good about the way people are acting, how they're talking? There's not a, like, how do you measure culture? I know that, if you take experiences from your past, mm-hmm. is there any tangible item that, our listeners can use to find out? Because oftentimes CEOs or, chief people officers, there is an experience gap from there. Like, it seems great to us. How do you keep kind of your finger on the pulse and how do you measure it?
Yeah. So, kind of two thoughts on that in the sense of I've seen companies, go down the path of just because of size, that they have to measure it through engagement surveys. Right. I've not ever successfully really seen that done well. And so the other path that I kind of go down is more around the, and this speaks to that the people team doesn't own the culture. It's about enabling the leaders to have a really good sense of their people. And so I actually don't look at it as something that you can, that I want to measure, like put a number to it. Like, I know there are sentiment and engagement surveys and we love our data. Yeah, we do. But I would say that I'd argue that are we delivering the results to the customers? Like, are we hitting our targets? Okay, like, that's one thing. Right. And then the other thing is, are we, we can look at other metrics that drive, that show results. What's our voluntary turnover? Are people leaving the organization? Why are they leaving the organization? Like, let's dig into that and think about the whole life cycle of employment and where are the opportunities there. The other thing, though, that I would say is, just from a, one of the things we talk about from a powerful tool for us is referrals, employee referrals. Like, are people referring their friends? That's a great sign of whether we're doing something right or not. And we're proud because people do refer their friends because we have an environment that people can grow. Again, going back to, you know, kind of our foundation. And I think those are the individuals that stay because, right, what's one of the number one things is, do you have a best friend at work? Like, hello, hire my friend. Yeah, I'll stay, you know. That, I think, is an important, and you can't put a number on that, personally.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think you made some, I mean, it's tough, you know, it's, I'll be the first to admit, like, I'm sure, like, we're not a perfect company by any means. So the reality, shocking, newsflash, write this down here. But I mean, you know, I think some ways, you know, you talk about, I think voluntary turnover, referrals, those areas are kind of some measurements. I think there's kind of two things that you're looking for. Number one is another way to think about culture is authenticity on one kind of spectrum. And the other one is this concept of consistency. I think one way to ask someone is, do you trust your leaders? I think that's a core question. And trust in general is a core question. We have it. We think about customer trust. Are we earning customer trust? Do our employees trust leaders? And I think if you don't have trust, then it doesn't matter what you're saying. This goes back to the concept, oh, we have these core values or guiding principles. We put them up on the wall, but this is how decisions get made, and this is how, when things get tough, leaders act. So do you trust leadership is probably the single best question you can ask, and depending on the answer to that question, will tell you really how healthy the culture is ultimately. Mm-hmm. I think the other one, though, is this concept of consistency. We'll talk about pervasiveness. You know, there's a story of somebody asked a janitor at NASA, what's your job here? And he responded, my job is to put someone on the moon. Mm-hmm. And that concept of that cascading it down, does everyone consistently understand and apply whatever your values or principles are? That's probably the next measure. If they can't repeat it, or when no one's looking, they don't act in that way, then you really have obviously a distribution or cascading penetration issue there. But I think those are some ways to think about it. But ultimately, I'd say leadership trust is one, and then the consistent application when no one's looking, you know, like that's how to think about it. Those are tough to measure for sure. And I think that's back to Megan's point around, like, you could do a survey. Do I trust you? They don't even trust the survey. So, like, you know, they're like, you're tracing my IP. You know exactly. Like, so, like, you could survey all day long and, you know.
But usually, JT, his approach is, look him dead in the eye. Do you trust me?
Because that gets always the honest response. Yeah, everyone loves that intense New Yorker stare at someone. That always elicits nothing
but
honesty.
We're not kidding, by the way.
That happens. Do that on the first day with
a
new hire?
It's usually, like, 30 days in, just to...
Oh, well, that's one way to do it.
Yeah. I do not recommend that for any successful culture testing.
It's totally true.
Well, guys, I mean, this has been great. I want to give our listeners an opportunity to connect with you guys, whether that's on social media or with Drip as a company. Megan, you want to kind of tell them how they can get in touch with you?
Yeah. So check out our website, www.drip.com. And I think, you know, from a careers page standpoint, check us out for opportunities. We're always looking to add, obviously, top talent, whether it's here in Minneapolis or whether it's in Salt Lake. We've got opportunities. The other thing, just for me personally, you know, feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn. I don't know about you, JT.
No, LinkedIn. Yep. That's my social media drug of choice.
So we've talked a lot about culture. You know, talking about some takeaways that our listeners can have, what can they take back to their business and implement and make a difference there? What are some things that you guys are doing at Drip that you would consider maybe rituals or traditions?
Yeah, so I think first and foremost, you know, when we talk about culture, it's about customer first, and you've heard that today, I think, consistently. And so for us, it's all about rituals that bring back and remind our team of the customers that we're serving. And so a couple things that we do that I think is pretty pretty awesome is we do every week, we pull all 110 employees together on Tuesday over lunch and bring in lunch, and we do what's called Tuesday Teardown. And so that event in and of itself, every single employee in the company participates in that. And it's all about what started is this whole concept of deep appreciation of customer problems. And so our customer success team brings in a customer and really kind of what we say tears them down. So really looks at from the beginning of their journey with us to today, and you know, what are the results, what are the problems that we solve for them, and or where do we have opportunities that we could have done better, or issues, and or what we talk about are from a playbook standpoint, how did that play out with this customer? And we learn about, how do we make it better the next time, basically. And the cool thing about that is that it opens up an opportunity for any employee in the organization, no matter what function, what your role is, to ask questions. And so not only is it giving our team members exposure to the customer problems that we're actually solving firsthand, and the results that we're driving for that, but it's also giving them an opportunity to learn about like how fundamentally our product works, which I think, my people team, we don't sit on the front line with customers. We don't sit in with engineering and doing the coding, we just don't engage in that level. And so this is a weekly reminder of the work and the business and the foundation of the product that we have. So that's one example of customer first. The other, another one that we do is every Friday, we have what's called weekly wins, and we wrap the day with it, and it's at 4:30. It's usually happy hour based, which is nice. And really the fundamental kind of reason behind weekly wins is, again, we bring back the customer. So JT usually MCs it. It's about, what did we get in the door this week from a customer standpoint? How much revenue are we attributing through our product, which is pretty phenomenal. And then we actually share who the customers are and what their products are. And, in the world of e-commerce, some of that stuff is pretty crazy, fun. And so we talk about that and learn about the actual customers and what are the products that they're selling. So that's weekly wins. And then the other piece of that is it's an opportunity to do shout outs and recognize employees. And so it doesn't matter, again, what level, what the impact was that these employees had, but, just recognizing your coworkers and recognizing the work that's going on. And we zoom it to Salt Lake City and back and forth so that it's a company-wide event. The other thing that we do that's kind of, in a startup world around customer service and kind of frontline customer success is we do ticket smashes. And so ticket smash in our world is, the customer tickets that are coming in, the problems that our CS team is solving front lines. We actually open it up to any employee in the organization to be able to participate and literally smash tickets. And so I did my first one here just recently, the last quarter. We do these on a quarterly basis, but it's, you can pair with a customer success individual and really sit down and actually learn about how the tickets come in, how they're, whether it's via chat or whether it's via email, how we service them, like the language that we use, how to actually solve issues, whether it's billing issues. I mean, like I wouldn't normally deal with that, right? But it just gives us not only appreciation for customer problems, but also appreciation for our customer service team that are the front lines and representing and servicing our most important asset, our customers. So I think that those are just a few examples that we do from a regular cadence standpoint that is all about the customers, but it's also about building community in our team as well.
Mm-hmm. Is there a point, I guess, from your perspective as a company grows, when some of these rituals or traditions become harder to do? And because people value those things. And when a company grows to a certain size, I think people feel like some of that stuff's going away and it affects them somehow. Is there an employee count? Is there, because there's probably people going through that right now where they're kind of feeling that shift.
Yeah, I think so. There's a couple things. So just even that concept of having two locations and all of a sudden what becomes, happy hour central time is now, more middle of the day, Salt Lake Mountain time.
Do they complain about that?
They're not complaining, but I don't know if that's necessarily the best for getting a full week in. But
right.
But those, I think sometimes, so there's two things. I think there's, as you expand, particularly with geographies, all of a sudden time zones become a logistical challenge. So maybe weekly wins doesn't continue if we were in multiple time zones, or I've known of companies where they start having, you know, European offices. So all of a sudden you start to have some neutral time across all. So maybe those shift, but, you know, the spirit. I think the bigger danger is, you know, the finance, you know, not to be stereotyping here, but somebody comes in and says, this is a very expensive lunch, not just from the food you're bringing in, but you have 100 people coming in every week to either build relationships with each other or to, you know, talk about customer problems. That's an expensive lunch. And then you start getting down this kind of rabbit hole of dollars and cents, but you miss the bigger picture. And I think that's probably the bigger issue. When you get to 500 people, somebody starts... some spreadsheet jockey starts doing the math on that, and then somebody says, you know, that this is really a costly meeting. And I think that's when these small startups lose their specialness. And I think the maintenance of those rituals that are both have a value, you know, whether it's reinforcing the culture and or just what makes these companies different than other companies. I think when you lose that, and you know, is that's when you cross over. That's mm-hmm. when you jump the shark, I think, as a startup. Mm-hmm. So I think it's up to the leaders to commit to the consistent application, maybe not identical application, but the consistency of keeping that spirit alive, you know, as companies grow. So I think that's the key thing, is not to lose sight of that in the name of something which might be more short-sighted, like right. dollars and cents.
Megan, do you have any advice for listeners who have ideas that they maybe want to bring to their CEO? Maybe they're afraid to or don't know how to. How do you present ideas that you have to JT?
Yeah. So I put it in a PowerPoint present. No, I'm just kidding. no, I think it's building, you know, we talked about trust earlier. And I think it's even more important between the CEO and head of people, head of HR, to have that fundamental trust, because, you know, we disagree like the best of them and can talk through things. And I think so, just having enough, what I would say, courage to bring the ideas forward, and they may get, you know, turned down, but yet at the same time, if you don't bring it forward, nothing, you know, moves forward. And so what's that?
So I think the best ideas are the ones that there's a groundswell on. And so when you see small groups of people already doing concepts, and then we want to make them broader, those are the ones that, because that shows that grassroots. So like we have concepts. So I think when there's, I think the danger is something top down. A, because it's top down, and B, it's like, do people really want to do this? And so like, we're going to do this program of X, Y, Z. And then, you know, you cascade it down, and then, you know, you do it for a couple of weeks or sessions, and then it trails off. And after 90 days, we're like, oh, whatever happened to that? Yeah. But the flip is when you see something that is organically occurring, and then you're just trying to amplify it. So like there's this concept, we have organically created book clubs in certain departments. Our sales team has a book club. Our marketing team has a book club. And what they do is they self-assign, like I don't even know, they have an amazing reading list. I'm not even aware of this, what goes on. But they assign an old book, and then they talk about it amongst themselves. Now we're like, okay, maybe we should have a broader book club. That's an example of an idea that... as a CEO, like all you're doing is like giving gasoline to something that already has an ignition at some level versus mm-hmm. we're going to do some program, we're going to roll it out, and then it just lands flat and we don't have consistent, right. persistent resource dedication to it. So that's what I look for when ideas are brought to me. Okay. It's like, is this somebody's idea or is this actually something that's already occurring in the organization? Mm-hmm.
Awesome. It's such a pleasure. Oh my gosh. I'm so glad we were all able to get together today. John, really cool. JT, sorry. Really cool to have a CEO be represented on our podcast. I hope that as other HR listeners, you know, hear this podcast and hear the insights that you were able to provide today, that maybe they might be inspired if they're invited to also include their CEO in the future. So really appreciate it. And obviously also to you as well, Megan. So thank you. Thank you. So thanks to our listeners for tuning in again for our second episode of What the HR. If you want to hear more episodes like this, be sure to subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, or whatever platform you're listening to this podcast now. Also, while you are subscribing, be sure to leave us a rating and also provide us some feedback in the comments. If you enjoyed the podcast, do us a favor and share with your network, your boss, your CEO. Help us get the podcast in front of anyone who wants to know what HR looks like when done well. Also, if you have suggestions for show topics or people that you would like us to interview, please email Mike and I at podcast@tcshrm.org. That's podcast@tcshrm.org. If you want to find out more about Twin City Sherm or our upcoming events, please visit our website at tcshrm.org. You can also follow us on LinkedIn, Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Finally, if you're not already a member of Twin City Sherm, please use code WHATTHEHR at checkout and you will receive $20 off your membership. So thanks for listening and we'll see you next episode.